Hey, can I talk to you? Over 25 years ago, on September 29th, 1998, we watched a brainy girl with curly hair drop everything to follow a guy she only kind of knew all the way to college. And so began Felicity. My name is Juliette Littman, and I'm a Felicity superfan. Join me, Amanda Foreman, who you may know better as Megan, the roommate, and Greg Grunberg, who you may also know as Sean Blunberg, as the three of us revisit our favorite moments from the show and talk to the people who helped shape it. Listen now to Dear Felicity on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
It is Wednesday, April 17th. When you talk about the entertainment business, you obviously talk about the attention economy, the battle for eyeballs between all forms of entertainment and social media and other distractions. We talked about that before on the show, especially the battle between Hollywood and the big tech companies. I think it's pretty clear that big tech is doing a better job these days at winning attention, at least when it comes to minutes spent on platforms like TikTok and YouTube. And we should count Netflix here, too. The tech is a big differentiator there. I saw a new report this week that shed some light on that push and pull. Accenture, the consulting firm, did a survey of 6,000 people across 10 countries and asked them about their media consumption habits. There's some interesting stuff in it. Two-thirds of consumers consider user-generated content as entertaining as traditional forms of entertainment. Two-thirds. That's a scary number for the companies that spend $200 million on traditional forms of entertainment, namely movies. The report also goes on to recommend what it calls radical reinvention in entertainment to better align the offerings from the industry to what consumers actually want. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done, but it cites specific companies like Sony and the New York Times as having radically reinvented themselves and been rewarded for it. They've also got a metric they call the Thrive Index to show just how successfully these companies are reinventing. It's interesting stuff, even though conceptually it can be a bit frustrating. So I invited John Peters on the show to discuss. He's the media and entertainment lead at Accenture and one of the authors of the study. So today is how Hollywood should radically reinvent itself and what consumers actually want from their entertainment. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. Okay, we are here with John Peters, who is the global lead for media and entertainment at Accenture. Welcome, John.
Thanks. Great to be here.
All right. So I want to talk about this study that you guys do. And it caught my eye because I think most people in the entertainment industry recognize that reinvention is necessary. Most of these studios are sitting on 100-year-old businesses that have not changed that much. The technology has changed, but they haven't changed all that much. And there is a sort of aging generation of leadership. There is frustration amongst the next generations that they have not, in many cases, been given opportunities to reinvent the business. And then here comes this study that you guys put out, not just saying that reinvention is necessary, but sort of giving a roadmap of how to do it. So walk us through some of the hows of this study and what it says about what the industry should be doing.
So there aren't many out there that have already been announced. So this is largely where we had to explore things like, you know, merging with a gaming studio, buying a connected TV OS provider. In Europe, there's some really interesting things like launching an AI-powered radio station. And these are the types of plays that we're not seeing a lot of, and we wanted to compare them versus what you might say are the things we see more regularly.
So it's like a case study almost, where you're comparing some of the things the studios are already doing that they consider to be reinvention that may or may not be such. And then you're throwing out some possibilities of things and sort of comparing and contrasting and evaluating what consumers actually want these companies to be.
That's right. So if you want to position yourself for strategic and financial health going forward, you need to look beyond some of these low reinvention plays and consider bolder plays that are merge with a gaming studio, go into TVOS, consider getting into the social media space to have platform economics support you. So we had a number of these options that we looked at that we would recommend. Now, for each company, does that mean that all of these fit? No. And so each of the what we would recommend each client do is go through this exercise. And so there's several steps we had there, but this was the finding is that they need to start getting bold. They need to look out beyond their capabilities. Here's the next observation that's really challenging, and is radical action likely requires them to look beyond their core competencies.
And that's an interesting one, because I think a lot of companies see that as potentially disastrous if they leave their main lane of business and go elsewhere. And you cite two particular companies that you say are acting radically and thus performing well. One is the New York Times, which I agree. The New York Times is basically becoming a games and lifestyle company rather than a news company, at least on the business side. And those new avenues are funding the rest of the news operation by generating subscribers. But you also cite Sony Pictures as a company that is acting radically and performing well. And I actually saw that and wondered, because I was thinking, okay, well, Sony doesn't have a streaming service. And that's what you say is the radical thing, that they did not go into the streaming wars by trying to launch their own branded streaming service. But that was sort of not really their choice. They didn't have the capabilities. They didn't have television networks in this country. They didn't have distribution. They were primarily a seller. And then they just continued being a seller. And that in the short term has worked out for them, because they're now the proverbial arms dealer that is selling to everyone. How is that radical?
You're right. So first, part of sometimes strategy is saying no. And so not getting into a streaming service ended up being a boon for them. But you're right, it's really Sony Corporation that we would point to as being radical. So someone who might have been a sleepy electronics and semiconductor business, you know, now has done, you know, they're one of the leaders in the video game space. They're getting into broadband service. And get this, at CES, they're talking about getting into electric vehicles. And so we think that's an example of someone going after strategic resilience and diversification and moving to where consumers are going. And through that, their economics are thriving wonderfully.
Okay, so it's Sony mostly, but then Sony Pictures just as an arm of that.
Yeah, but let me go back to your point, which is, diversification into spaces where you aren't already, excellent can be risky, no doubt. But we think this is what it means. If radical options are the only way to thrive, this is that moment where you need to be willing to make that bold bet. And, you know, that's what we do at Accenture. We help people make those bold bets successfully. But I will point to a couple of things just to, you know, further create urgency around this. Who's diversifying in this space? It's the big tech entrants. You know, Amazon is in movie studios and gaming and audiobooks, but they're in groceries and, you know, pharmaceutical delivery, right? And then YouTube launched a vMVPD. So the competitors are making those bold bets and entering spaces where they had no expertise. And that just creates further urgency for our, you know, clients and legacy media companies to be ready to consider those moves.
But isn't there a limit? I mean, I don't think you guys would recommend AMC Theaters buying a silver mine in Nevada. I mean, what are the boundaries of diversification here? What do you recommend as, you know, taking your core competency and extending it into other arenas?
You know, certainly we think that they can, even within the media space, there's plenty of opportunities for diversification that can help you build audiences, further serve your audiences that you already have, provide levels of diversification. The music business is actually going up for the first time in, you know, in so long. And that can actually be a growth model if there's a number of players who could add more music distribution to their plays. Again, who's getting in? Who's already diversifying in this space? Apple has music. They have streaming.
Yeah, but the music companies were forced into this. They didn't necessarily want Spotify. They were sort of dragged into this and became willing partners only after they recognized this was gaining traction.
That's correct. But we're here now and it's a growth space. Mm-hmm. So as we try and help our clients grow, we look to see, you know, another great example is sports betting. You know, for years, lots of people have been averse to that. It's a massive growth market, particularly with younger audiences. So as we support our clients in finding and sizing these growth opportunities, you know, we help them both consider whether it makes sense for them, but also help them think about how to extend into those areas where they don't have capabilities successfully. Some of that is, as you can imagine, through acquisition of someone who does have capabilities. Some of it's through partnerships with people who have capabilities. It takes longer to build those capabilities organically in-house. But, you know, this is part one is finding the growth strategy. Part two is figuring out how to execute on it. And we help clients with both.
So some of the stats in your survey are interesting, and they are backed up by other surveys I've seen. But the numbers are pretty stark. 36% of consumers, that's more than a third, say they struggle to find something or anything entertaining to watch. And 60% of consumers are what's called, quote, serial churners, meaning they constantly sign up and cancel services based on what they want to watch. Serial churners, by the way, great Coachella band name. But I think that, and those numbers are backed up by other surveys I've seen, 47%, about half of people, canceled more subscriptions than they did the year before. And two-thirds of consumers consider user-generated content, social media stuff, as entertaining as traditional forms of entertainment. Two-thirds.
Right. So I think we've been doing this study now for 3 years, and we've been watching these numbers move. There's a hardening of certain things, which is there's frustration with the fragmented streaming universe and how you need to navigate and how hard it is to find things. But you are right. There is increased readiness among them to ditch services at a faster pace than we saw even in 2022. But what's really interesting is you've probably been hearing about serial churning. And for a while, I thought it was something that was true of younger generations, right? The younger kids, they go in, they watch Mandalorian, then they dump the service. But now it's also true of older demographics. We've all gotten more fluent in how to churn. And these are things that make it harder for our clients because it means they need to keep having lots and lots of content that's expensive content to lure people back. Plus, they have to probably lure that same person back multiple times.
Well, that's why you're seeing more bundling and you're seeing longer term deals offered, you know, sign up for the year and you get it for half price, that kind of stuff.
That's right. One of the other stats that wasn't in there that I'll share with you that I think is also frightening is, okay, so we had a number of what I call choice scenarios or situational smackdowns. We said, okay, if you want to have fun or feel happy, or you want to feel lonely, or you want to relax and wind down, or learn something, in all these scenarios we present to them, what is your preferred media that you go to get that feeling? And, you know, last year, streaming won many of them, right? And scored high. And then social video and social media was sort of trucking along pretty close. This year, social media and social video beat streaming in every doggone category. And so it's interesting that of the 11 choice scenarios, 100% of the time, social media and social video won. But just the stark difference between last year just is an interesting statement about the trajectory of consumer, you know, how
they're
choosing.
So what do you do with that if you're a studio, if you're a purveyor of professionally produced content? Do you throw up your arms and say, fuck it, let's just buy Snapchat? Do you say, okay, we're going to launch, you know, Disney on the Go, which is going to be our own social media channel just for Disney fans? Like, what do? Do you just lean into YouTube and reduce your big movie and television show content budgets? Like, what do you recommend? What is the radical choice that you guys are recommending to clients?
Well, we aren't necessarily recommending a single strategy in response to that. We think everyone needs to acknowledge it and take action. And so this is the era of urgency and radical moves. And it's been interesting to watch over the last decade where there has been this divide between the creator economy, right, which happens on other platforms. And then there is this, I think someone called it the corporate media economy, which is, you know, creating things that are happening in this space. The two have not really mixed. And that's what I would love to see is, you know, where do you go to talk about this live sports you're watching? You go off the platform to go onto X or Instagram or whatever. There's no combining of these things. I'd love to see our clients engage to take advantage of those services, to consider tapping into them, making them their own. Those are all legitimate options that should be on the table as consumers are spending more and more of their time off of those legacy media, even streaming platforms, on the social media and social video platforms.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
All right. So to bring this full circle, reinvention is needed. You say radical, you say outside your comfort zone, but you're not telling us what exactly to do. You're telling us you need to do something and it's got to be big. Give us some scenarios that you think might make sense for some of these big players, not just buy a connected TV provider or merge with a game studio. Are there opportunities out there that you guys are seeing and that the consumers are telling you they want? Something specific.
One of the main things that we see in our data is that consumers are frustrated by the fragmentation of the viewing experience. Last year, we put out three archetypes in our Reinvent for Growth study that we thought were successful moves. We've talked already about the content merchant space. I would recommend that several players decide to get out of their distribution and become content merchants.
Right. So shut down Peacock, shut down Paramount Plus, and become the arms dealers.
Those are examples. The other is audience cultivators, which we think of as diversifying the number of spaces. So, consider buying Spotify if you are a leading streaming service provider. So you've got multiple ways that you're bringing audiences together that provides multiple subscriptions, multiple opportunities to ad monetize. You're just building bigger audiences. But the third one that I think is really untapped by any media, traditional media players today, is what we call the aggregator play. You're seeing who's doing it today is more of certainly the TV operating systems. You're seeing the person who's incredibly interesting is in Prime Video. You're seeing that they have a resale carousel once you get in there, where you can watch your other streaming services inside of Prime Video. This does a few things. For consumers, it allows them to get all their stuff in one place. But really, one of the things that we've found over the last few years is that consumers are also frustrated not simply by the navigation, but that recommendations, for example, are terrible. How many times have you logged in and said, I think I want to watch that thing, right? When they say recommend.
Oh, it's hilarious. I watch almost exclusively Saturday Night Live on Peacock. Like I will watch on Sunday or Monday that week's episode. Every single time I go to Peacock, I scroll through. It does not serve me SNL. I have to go to search and search for SNL because even though it's pretty much the only thing I watch on Peacock, it doesn't serve it to me. It's actually amazing that that doesn't happen.
So one of the things that we are seeing through this, we did a study recently, I'll send it to you afterwards, really interesting, is that imagine you're spending your time on, let's just say, five different services. And if you even if you spent them equally, each one only knows you, Matt, 20%. So they are always going to whiff on the recommendations. Someone who can be an aggregator of those services has the opportunity to know Matt 100% and be able to increasingly serve you the right ads and charge high CPMs because they really know Matt and they can serve you the content that you really want.
Apple and Amazon seem to have prioritized establishing that relationship, and they would like to be the portal for everything. We'll see if that actually happens. I mean, HBO Max was yanked off of Amazon and now it's back. And I think, you know, Netflix has had a complicated relationship with other services selling its product. But we'll see who ends up ahead in that race.
What's interesting about the guys you just mentioned is they decided that they weren't simply in a single business. They said that they're in the they're competing for consumer time spent. And they said, how else can I do that? And they, because of that, were willing to get into new businesses and expand beyond their core competencies. And in order to get more and more of the consumer's life. And that would be the great opportunity for legacy media companies to not simply think of themselves as someone who makes incredible content. They do. But they are also, you know, people who please and tell great stories to consumers. Based on that, the New York Times got into other spaces. What other spaces can our good friends in legacy Hollywood studios get into to increase that relationship and improve their economics?
Yeah, we're seeing Disney now. There's some reporting this week that they are going to add channels to Disney Plus, where, you know, the Marvel channel will play Marvel shows and it will be more of a lean back experience. So you don't have to find something to watch. It finds you. And I think that is a response to surveys like yours that are showing that people are frustrated.
You know, you got to give him credit. So Bob Iger came in. He said he was going to do some expansive thinking. I think he even later joked about making, you know, that he was taking a lot of heat for saying that. But on their last earnings call, they certainly came back with several big bets that are, you know, no one else is making. So you think the big deal with Epic to get into the video game space, the streaming aggregator is we just talked about the value that aggregators can play, right? And so they're making moves. Plus, you know, their sports betting entry. Again, our data about what consumers want support all three of those moves. So it's nice to see people making bold moves in that space. Plus, getting into FAST, as you said, is another example. Just going where consumers want you to go and being ready to expand your business plays to match what consumer demands.
Well, they need to increase that time spent on Disney Plus. Is the media and entertainment sector as risk averse as it seems to me compared to other industries?
Certainly, you know, our clients who are, you know, platform clients, Silicon Valley clients do seem to show a level of boldness that few other industries show. But I think you got to give these guys some credit over the last several years for making the move into streaming. I do think we're just at that point where they are stuck and, you know, also their financial fortitude limits what they can do. That's why one of our first options we recommend for them is to do, you know, not only get a sense of where consumers are going, but, you know, get, you know, do a review of your portfolio, look at your financials, undertake some restructuring that allows to free up capital to make some big plays. But, you know, your point about the industry being risk averse, we see lots of industries that are risk averse, but over the last few years, we're seeing increasing levels of bold plays by some, you know, companies as interesting as consumer products and apparel companies and insurance companies. So everybody's realizing that with the changing face of the change that technology injects into these industries, they need to move more quickly. Here's a thought for you, Matt, which an Accenture study into M&A and which M&A plays were successful. We found that 80% of those plays that had above market returns were those that had technology as the center of the investment thesis. And so now apply that to media and entertainment. Over the last several years, most of the plays have been about catalog acquisitions or acquiring talent, right? And so now, wouldn't it be exciting to see a new era of M&A in this industry that's about obtaining, you know, technology that differentiates?
Well, we saw that in the episode we did earlier this week about M&A, where some of the biggest ones were technology-based, where it's Instagram, Facebook, Google buying YouTube. Like, those are the biggest upside deals because they're technology-based.
Yeah. Now apply that to the industry where we live all the time. And what might be the technologies that could set it aside? Is it going to be, you know, advertising technology and operating TV operating systems are certainly obvious places. The dawn of AI that supports different operations. These, you know, if someone develops an increasingly interesting large language model to support various aspects. These are all spaces that we should expect to see or hope to see M&A base being made in media and entertainment space, not simply the traditional ones.
All right. Well, I'm excited. My Thrive Index, my personal Thrive Index, is very high. Craig's is off the chart. He radically reinvents himself every day. It's amazing. But thanks for coming on, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Craig, you watching a lot of Netflix lately?
I'm always watching Netflix here and there.
By the way, I'm starting to sound like the pilot in Airplane. Like, Craig, you like Gladiator movies?
It's always in my top three. I still probably watch the most of HBO or maybe Hulu, but Netflix is always there.
Okay. Their earnings are tomorrow, Thursday, and the analyst community is pretty bullish on Netflix lately, thanks to the password sharing crackdown and some breakout content from the first quarter, things like Griselda and The Gentlemen, and all those Warner Brothers movies. I mean, the analysts don't say it, but all the Warner's movies on Netflix are a huge differentiator. I mean, the movies in general have just really improved because the other studios are now willing to license more stuff. So I think that's a factor.
It also appears that Gen Z has discovered Sex and the City, which is now on Netflix. My wife has been watching a lot of Sex and the City. She's not Gen Z, but I've been told that the young people have discovered Sex and the City.
Yeah, I'm not sure that how much of that is in the first quarter because that ends at the end of March. But the analyst community, let's see, Morgan Stanley says Netflix is going to add 7.5 million new subscribers this quarter. That would be a big bump from a year ago that quarter, which only had 1.75 million new ads. Wedbush Securities, the other analyst firm, says 8.5. Moffitt Nathanson says 7 million. They're all sort of in that range. I'm going to put the over under at 7.5 million net ads, and I'm going to take the over.
And where would this rank in terms of the best quarters Netflix has had in terms of gaining subscribers?
Well, in the pandemic, they had much better subs. But last quarter, Q4 of 2023, they added 13.1 million new subs. Now, keep in mind, they had a ton of new content, and fourth quarter is typically a bigger sign-up month because they premiere a bunch of stuff and people are home for the holidays. And the password sharing crackdown had just gone into effect or was in the early days, so they really benefited from that. But Netflix has the momentum now. They've broken away. They have 260 million subscribers worldwide. And I think this quarter is going to be a blowout, and they're going to get the over on 7.5 million subs.
Netflix really does feel like an always-on channel now. I really just go to it just to see like what they have this week. Oh, what's on now? Every other service to me is I go there to watch one show that I know I'm going to watch The Sympathizer on HBO or Shogun on Hulu. Yeah. And Netflix is like, I don't go there to watch anything. I go there to see what they have.
You just turn it on. Wow, yeah. they should blurb you. Craig is available for blurbs, Netflix.
I'm not saying I like a lot of the shows, but I usually just turn it on and see what's, you know, it feels like cable now almost.
I know. My wife's watching some crime thing of what, you know, some woman may or may not have murdered her husband.
Sure, like, sure.
I know. And I saw that was number one. Like, what did Jessica do or whatever the name of it? It was number
one. I'll always come back for Selling Sunset every time a new season drops.
Yeah, the film stuff. We'll get into more of the film stuff and what's going on the film side at Netflix, because the new hire, Dan Lin, is starting to put his new policies in place. They've reorged the film group into genres rather than budgets for how they make movies. They want to make less movies, fewer movies, and have them cost less. And they're now in, what is it, year 8, 9, 10 of saying, we're just going to make better movies now. So we'll see if they can actually do that. I know.
I can't remember the last Netflix original movie that I thought was good. So
the award stuff isn't bad, typically. What was their awards movie this year? Oh, May December. May December was pretty good, I thought. But they bought that. So take the over on the Netflix subscriber ads. By the way, Netflix has not given guidance on a specific number. They just say that it's going to be more than the 1.75 million. So they are not tooting their own horn, but the stock has really risen in the past 4 or 5 months. And that suggests that the investor community knows what is coming. So we'll see. All right. That's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, John Peters. I want to thank producer Craig Horlbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez. And I want to thank you. We will see you one more time this week.